Dona Johansson is Stuff's national correspondent specialising in sport, and a very good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. I'm still getting over the lyrics to that song a little bit. Consider me scandalised.
No, it's sort of slightly scandalising, isn't it? Hey, look, it came out of the early 80s, is it? Well, it's, you know, it's got to be a little bit of scandal involved. Now, there was a scandal, actually, a mini one within rugby over the treatment of Pacifica teams. Now we have seen some real progress with respect to the 2022 Super Rugby season. How close are we?
Yeah, really big news this week. We've finally got some confirmation around who those licences for the two Pacific Island teams have been granted to. Moana Pacifica is one of the successful candidates, and the other is Fiji and Drua. So, yeah, a huge step forward. And I think that, like, you know, it just seems like such a groundbreaking moment for Pacific Island rugby, doesn't it? Because, you know, they've never had the chance to be able to get these professional contracts and play, you know, on their home turf. They're having to go overseas to get those contracts, and often we see a huge player drain. Once the players get established in the UK or New Zealand, they then take up residency and end up sort of being poached by their national teams if they show any talent. So this is going to be a huge step forward for Pacific Island rugby, I believe.
They have worked so hard for so long. What's been the sort of turning point here, do we think? Is it just they've successfully argued the case?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's not just New Zealand rugby recognising it, it's the world rugby as well, because they are stumping up with a lot of cash to support these teams, which is hugely pleasing. I think it's somewhere around $2.3 million each year for the first 3 years. So that's going to be help these teams ensure that they are sustainable, because that's what we want to see. We don't want them coming in to this competition, having 1 or 2 years and performing badly on the field, and then sponsors lose hope and desert them. So I think that's going to be hugely important for them.
It's just an aside on the Super Rugby, but I couldn't help noticing, we've done a lot of talking lately, Dana, on 9 to Noon, about how the game has changed, just how incredibly physical it is now. This has been sort of initially in the context of the concussion story, but, you know, a lot of ex-All Blacks coming out and lending their weight to saying the way the game's been coached, the way it is being played, is just so confrontational. And now you've got a halfback, you know, an actual on-field player coming out and pointing out the high rate of injuries there's been this season just to one side, the Otago Highlanders side. It's, you've got to wonder if something's got to give at some point with player welfare, and whatever it is causing this level of injury, and serious injury. You know, we're not talking ankle sprains.
Yeah, absolutely, because we are seeing rule changes every year to try and sort of clean up that contact and protect the players, particularly around the head. But it is interesting to see, you know, the level of attrition that there has been this year in Super Rugby Aotearoa. And it was, I think, you know, this conversation sort of started last year when New Zealand Rugby moved quickly to set up a new Super Rugby competition. And I think for a lot of people, initially we thought, well, you know, they've removed the travel element, that kind of fatigue that sets in with the ongoing travel when you're just playing within New Zealand. A lot of us considered that it would be not as hard on the players, but it seems to be the opposite, because, those close local derbies are really taking it out of the players. And it has been interesting to hear Aaron Smith come out and say words to that effect, because I think in the past, current players have been kind of reluctant because they might be accused of, I guess, being too soft and you know, just go out there and earn your paycheck, mate. But
they're just managed on what they're allowed to say generally, aren't they?
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
many
absolutely.
Professional athletes.
Yeah, but, you know, I'd take the opinion of someone that's actually, you know, sitting at the bottom of a ruck or being tackled week in, week out of their sense of the game over kind of what your armchair critics are saying. So I think it's hugely important to hear from the players on this.
It seems to be coming at almost at a twofold level. One is the reduced number of teams. That's the reality of Super Rugby Aotearoa, because he's been saying, you know, you want to have the buys set up well so that players can get some rest, and it just hasn't really happened this year. But also, you know, he's pointing to these season-ending injuries and saying it's rugby, it can just happen. But I'm quoting him, the brutality, the intensity of the games and how much is on the line now for playoff spots, it's brutal. You know, that's coming straight from the horse's mouth. It really is left for, I guess, the administrators and the coaches in New Zealand, but actually beyond, to ask the question, does our sport have a future if we're going to have this kind of a toll on top players, and also on, you know, parents watching and thinking, what do I want my kid to be playing? Anyway, I want to develop further another day, and perhaps bringing these extra teams in now to Super Rugby Aotearoa is going to allow a bit more pacing of buys and a bit more management of what the players are being asked to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we see the Trans-Tasman bubble opening. We'll, you know, this year see competition with those Australian franchises. And it sounds a bit arrogant to say, but this is kind of the messaging we're hearing from the players, is that those games against the Australian franchises are possibly, you know, a bit easier on the body.
Yeah. All right, let's look at what's happening in the women's game. The Blues and Chiefs have named their women's squads for an historic Super Rugby fixture.
Yes, yes. I'm really excited about this game, actually. It's still a couple of weeks away. May 1st is the fixture. So, I was kind of interested to see the makeup of those squads and whether they would just choose directly from their catchment areas, or whether they might try to sneak a few out-of-zone players in, like, the likes of Kendra Kotzig's down in Canterbury. But they have definitely stuck within the limitations of their region, so that's really good to see. And I guess on paper you'd give the Chiefs the edge at this point. They seem to have the most Black Ferns stars in there, including Chelsea Alley and Les Elder, the former Black Ferns captain who's still making a comeback from maternity leave last year. So it's going to be a really good clash. Unfortunately, we won't see some of those seven stars that sort of dabble in the 15s game as well, because their focus is entirely on Tokyo at the moment. So we won't see the likes of Portia Widman or Sarah Goss or Teresa Fitzpatrick, who tended to double up in the sevens and 15s game. But I still think it will be an intriguing match, and hopefully it sort of paves the way to see a bigger, more professionalised competition for women next year, because they're really going to need that competition in the lead up to the World Cup in September next year.
Yeah, I mean, those vacancies always give opportunities to the second tier players, but to your point, you want as much play as possible. This is the methodology that women's cricket adapted very, very successfully, actually, was to invest, given they never get to play anywhere like as much as the men, invest as much as possible in the core crew of players who are going to carry your sport for the foreseeable. It's interesting mentioning Tokyo. You know, you're still wondering about the state of those games, but let's come back to that another day. Let's get off to netball now, and the ANZ Premiership underway. Again, very welcome to see these seasons underway again.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it has been a little bit of an underwhelming build-up for netball. We haven't heard so much about what's going on there. Potentially, I don't know if netball seemed to just take their position as New Zealand's premier women's sport for granted a wee bit, and kind of they seem to just be using the same formula year in, year out. So it's a bit disappointing that there hasn't been more of a, you know, a real push to market these teams and these players. But yep, she's getting underway on Sunday. I guess the big talking point in the lead up to this weekend has been Emilia-Anne Ekenasio, the Pulse captain and Silver Ferns captain as well. She's announced, or the team's announced, that she won't be available for early in the season. She's just needing a bit of a mental health break. She missed last month's pre-season tournament as well. But it's what I find really intriguing about that situation is that she was so open at the time. She posted a very open post on social media. It's quite raw, sort of talking about how, you know, athletes at the top of their game experience mental health struggles as well. And she'd just come off the back of this amazing series against Australia, you know, being the first Silver Ferns captain to hold up the Constellation Cup in about 9 years. And yet she was struggling. And for her to come out and say that, I think is really impactful.
She's not the only athlete. There's a number of athletes at the moment talking openly about their private battles, and particularly in the context of the pressures of their sport, but also the unusual time. As we've spoken previously about these pressures of building up and tapering towards major events, and then, hello, is that major event going to happen or not?
Yeah, I think, you know, athletes thrive on certainty, and at this time, you know, they look at the calendar and they don't know if something's happening from one day to the next. Yeah, really interesting. We saw another story this week from Ashley Stanley of Locker Room with BMX star Jessie Smith, and she's announced she's pulled the pin on her campaign for Tokyo. She had a horror crash back in 2019. I'm not sure if you remember, but she ruptured her spleen in the crash. It was just awful. And she sort of admitted that she's been really struggling with this kind of crisis of confidence. And, you know, you have to be pretty fearless in that game. And, you know, when you can't be second guessing when you're going into some of those jumps or sort of elbowing your competitors as you go around the turn. And clearly that's really impacted her emotionally and it's taken away her love of the sport. So she's announced that she's just sort of stepping aside for now. And it must be such a big call to make with Tokyo so close. But I really commend her for coming out and sort of talking openly about those issues, and it really helps, I think, sort of destigmatise that whole conversation around mental health and saying it is okay to ask for help and admit you're not okay.
I think there was another, Sophie Pascoe, who's again spoken out quite recently. She came close to, you know, pulling the pin on the Tokyo prep as well. And it's important leadership to show, isn't it, from these top and immensely respected athletes, that it's not only okay for these things to happen to you, but it is okay to make good decisions and to talk about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Sophie Pascoe is amazing. She's got an amazing podcast out, actually, where she goes through a lot of various issues and well-being sort of stuff. And, yeah, just really being open. And she sort of relates her own experiences with her guests as well. So it's more like a conversation and a big talking heads piece. And I think it's, as I say, it's hugely impactful. Sophie Pascoe's shown amazing leadership in that area, I think.
Just on the Olympics, I mean, is there a sense that they are still on track? It's sort of gone quiet for a little while. We're watching second waves occur all over the place, but at this stage, still on track for an Olympics with a difference, let's face it.
Yeah, the New Zealand Olympic Committee actually marked 100 days this week and had a few athletes down at the cloud sort of talking about the various protocols that they're going through. Yeah, they just sort of seem to be ploughing ahead, although it sounds like over in Japan there's been, you know, a renewed wave of COVID. They're, you know, on the verge of declaring a state of emergency in Osaka. And I think they had one of the senior officials on the organising committee on television overnight sort of talking about it, and he did say, you know, it's not off the table that the Olympics will be cancelled. You know, they can't, if it's going to have a huge impact on public health, then they can't proceed with this. But yeah, at the moment everyone just has to prepare as if it's happening. So you just can't, it must be so hard being an athlete in that position with that little nagging doubt in the back of your mind. You just have to push it to one side and keep going.
Thank you, Dana. Always appreciated. Dana Johansson is Stuff's national correspondent specialising in sport and a sports commentator also for 9 to Noon, which is greatly appreciated.